he just marked. He grabs me by the waist and lifts me up, sliding me onto his lap. I grasp his arms and suck in a rush of air the second he pulls me against him. My t-shirt slides up my thighs, and the fact that I'm not wearing anything under it except underwear pretty much guarantees that I've gotten myself into something that's gonna be damn hard to pull away from. His eyes drop to the base of my throat as he slides a hand up my thigh, over my hip, and all the way up and into my hair. He grasps the back of my head, then pulls my neck against his mouth. This kiss is harder and not at all cautious like the rest of them. I slide my hands into his hair and keep his mouth pressed against my neck. He works his kisses all the way up my neck until his mouth meets my chin. Our bodies are meshed firmly together, and one of his hands has found my lower back and is keeping me flush against him. I can't move. I'm literally panting for breath, wondering where in the hell the strong Sydney went. Where's the Sydney who knows this shouldn't be happening? I'll look for her later, after he finishes with his pen. He pulls away when his lips come close to my mouth. Our bodies are as close as they can get without his mouth being on mine. He removes his hand from my lower back and brings the pen back around to my throat. When he touches the tip of it to my skin, I gulp, anticipating which direction he's about to go with it. North or south? North or south, I don't really care. He begins to scroll upward, but then he stops. He pulls the pen away from my neck and shakes it, then touches it to my neck again. He makes another movement upward with the pen, but stops again. He pulls back slightly and frowns at the pen, which I'm assuming has just run out of ink. He looks back at me and tosses the pen over my shoulder. I hear it land on the floor behind me. His eyes drop to my lips, which I'm assuming would have been the pen's final destination. We're both breathing heavily, knowing exactly what's about to come next, what we're about to experience again for the second time, knowing how much our first kiss affected us. I think he's as terrified as I am right now. I'm leaning all my weight into him because I've never been this weak. I can't think, I can't move, I can't breathe. I just need. He brings both hands to my cheeks and looks directly into my eyes. "Your call," he whispers. Jesus Christ, that voice. I stare at him. Not sure if I like that he just put the control in my hands. He wants this to be my decision. It's so much easier having someone else to blame when things go where they shouldn't. I know we shouldn't be putting ourselves into a situation we're only gonna regret once it's over. I could put a stop to it right here. I could make it easier by asking him to leave now, rather than when things get even more complicated between us. I could slide off his lap and tell him he shouldn't be here, because he hasn't even had time to forgive himself for what happened with Maggie. I could tell him to go away and not come back until his heart isn't confused anymore about who it wants. If that day ever comes. There are so many things I could and should and need to do, but none of them is what I want to do. The pressure picks the worst possible time to break me, the worst possible time. I squeeze my eyes shut when I feel a tear begin to work its way out. It trickles down my cheek, falling slowly toward my jaw. It's the absolutely slowest descent a tear has ever made. I open my eyes, and Ridge is watching it. He's following the wet trail with his eyes. And I can see his jaw growing more tense with every second that passes. I want to reach up and wipe it away, but the last thing I want to do is hide it from him. My tears say a whole lot more about how I'm feeling right now than I'm willing to say in a text. Maybe I need him to know that this is hurting me. Maybe I want it to hurt him too. When the tear finally curves and disappears under my jaw, he brings his eyes back to mine. I'm surprised by what I see in them. his own tears. Knowing that he's hurting because I'm hurting shouldn't make me want to kiss him, but it absolutely does. He's here because he cares about me. He's here because he misses me. He's here because he needs to feel what we felt in our first kiss again, just as I do. I've wanted that feeling back since the second his mouth left mine and he walked away. I remove my hands from his shoulders and grab the back of his head, then lean into him, bringing my mouth so close to his that our lips brush. He grins. "Good call," he whispers. He closes the space between our mouths and everything else falls away. The guilt, the worries, the concern over what happens after this kiss ends. It all melts away the second his mouth claims mine. He gently coaxes my lips apart with his tongue, and all the chaos running through my heart and head is eliminated when I feel his warmth inside my mouth. Kisses like his should come with a warning label. They can't be good for the heart. He runs a hand around to my upper thigh, then slips it beneath the hem of my t-shirt. His hand glides across my back, and he grips me tightly, then lifts his hips at the same time as he pulls me harder against him. Oh, my goodness. I become weaker and weaker with every rhythmic movement he creates with our bodies. I find whatever parts of him I can hold on to because I feel as if I'm falling. I grab his shirt and his hair while I moan softly into his mouth. When he feels the sound escape my throat, he quickly pulls away from my mouth and squeezes his eyes shut, breathing heavily. When he opens his eyes again, he's staring at my throat. He pulls his hand from beneath my shirt, then slowly brings it up to my neck. Oh, my dear sweet God. He wraps his fingers around my neck, gently pressing his palm into the base of my throat while he stares at my mouth. The thought of him wanting to feel what he's doing to me makes my head swarm and the entire room spin. I'm somehow able to glance into his eyes long enough to see them transform from a calm desire to an almost carnal need. With his other hand still curved around the back of my head, he pulls me to him with more urgency, covering my mouth with his. The second his tongue finds mine again, I give him more moans than he can possibly keep up with. This is exactly what I've wanted from him. I've wanted him to show up and tell me how much he missed me. I've needed to know that he cares about me, that he wants me. I've needed to feel his mouth on mine again, so I could know that the way his first kiss made me feel wasn't just in my head this whole time. Now that I have it, I'm not sure I'm strong enough for it. I know that the second this ends and he walks out the front door, my heart will die all over again. The more I open up to him, the more I need him. The more I admit to myself that I need him, the more it hurts to know that I still don't exactly have him. I'm still not convinced that he's here for the right reasons. Even if he is here for the right reasons, it's still wrong timing. Not to mention all the questions still running through my head. I try to push them away. And for brief moments it works. When his hands graze my cheek or his lips close over mine, I forget all about those questions that I can't seem to run away from. But then he'll pause to catch his breath, and he'll look me in the eye. And all those questions just cram right back into the front of my head until they're so heavy that they're forcing more tears to want to escape. I clench his arms when the uncertainty begins to take over. I shake my head and try to push against him. He pulls away from my mouth and sees my doubt building, and he shakes his head to get me to stop analyzing this moment between us. His eyes are pleading as he strokes my cheek, pulls me flush against him, and tries to kiss me again, but I struggle out of his arms. "Ridge, no," I say. I can't. I'm still shaking my head when his hand grips my wrist. I slide off his lap and keep walking until his fingers fall away from me. I walk straight to the kitchen sink and dispense soap into my hands, then begin scrubbing the ink off my arm. I reach into a drawer and pull out a rag, then wet it and press it to my neck. Tears are streaming down my cheeks as I try to wash away the reminders of what just happened between us. The reminders are going to make him that much harder to overcome. Ridge comes up behind me and places his hands on my shoulders. He turns me around to face him. When he sees that I'm crying, his eyes fill with apology and he pulls the rag from my hand. He brushes the hair off my shoulders and gently rubs my skin, washing away the ink. He looks incredibly guilty for making me cry, but it's not his fault. It's never his fault. It's no one's fault. It's both our faults. When he's finished rubbing away the ink, he tosses the rag behind me onto the counter, then pulls me against his chest. The comfort that surrounds me makes this even harder. I want this all the time. I want him all the time. I want these tiny snippets of perfection between us to be our constant reality. But that can't happen right now. I completely understand his earlier comment when he said that there are times he misses me and times he wishes he never met me, because right now, I'm wishing I never set foot out onto my balcony the first time I heard his guitar. If I never experienced how he could make me feel, then I wouldn't miss it after he's gone. I wipe my eyes and pull away from him. There's so much we need to discuss, so I walk to the couch, retrieve our phones, and bring his to him. I move away from him to lean against the other counter while I type, but he grabs my arm and pulls me back. He leans against the bar and pulls my back against his chest, then wraps his arms around me from behind. He kisses the side of my head, then moves his lips to my ear. "Stay here," he says, wanting me to remain pressed against him. It's crazy how being held by someone for just a few minutes can forever change how it feels not to be held by him. The second he releases his hold on you, it suddenly feels as if a part of you is missing. I guess he feels it too, which is why he wants me near him. Does he feel this way about Maggie too? Questions like this refuse to leave my mind. Questions like this keep me from believing he could ever be happy with the outcome of his situation, because he lost her in the end. I don't want to be someone's second choice. I lean my head against his shoulder and squeeze my eyes shut, trying my best not to let my mind go there again. However, I know I have to go there if I ever want to find a sense of closure. Ridge, I wish I could read your mind. Me, believe me, I wish you could too. He laughs quietly and squeezes me tightly in his arms. He keeps his cheek pressed against my head as he types out another text. "Ridge, we've always been able to say whatever is on our minds. You still have that with me, you know. You can say whatever you need to say, Sydney. That's what I've always loved about us the most." Why do all the words he says and writes and texts have to pierce my heart? I inhale a deep breath, then exhale carefully. I open my eyes and look down at my phone, terrified to ask the one question I don't really want the answer to. I ask it anyway, because as much as I don't want to know the answer, I need to know the answer. Me, if she texted you right now and said she made the wrong choice, would you go? Would you walk out my front door without thinking twice? My head stills when the rapid rise and fall of his chest comes to a sudden halt. I can no longer hear his breaths. His grip around me loosens slightly. My heart crumbles. I don't need to read an answer from him. I don't even need to hear it. I can feel it in every part of him. It's not as if I were expecting his answer to be any different. He spent 5 years with her. It's obvious that he loves her. He's never said otherwise. I was just hoping he was wrong. I immediately break away from him and walk swiftly toward my bedroom. I want to lock myself inside until he leaves. I don't want him to see what this does to me. I don't want him to see that I love him the same way he loves Maggie. I reach my bedroom and swing open the door. I rush inside and begin to shut the door behind me, but he pushes the door open. He steps into my bedroom and turns me around to face him. His eyes are searching mine, desperately trying to get across whatever it is he wishes he could say. He opens his mouth as if he's going to speak, but then he closes it again. He releases my arms, then turns around and runs his hands through his hair. He grips the back of his neck, then kicks my bedroom door shut with a frustrated groan. He leans his forearm into the door and presses his forehead against it. I do nothing but stand still and watch him try to fight the war within himself. The same war I've been fighting. He remains in the same position while he lifts his phone and responds to my text. Ridge,
that's not a fair question. Me.
Yeah, well, you didn't really put me in a fair situation by showing up here tonight. He turns until his back is flat against my bedroom door. He brings two frustrated hands to his forehead, then lifts his leg at the knee and kicks the door behind him. Seeing him struggle with who he really wants is more pain than I'm willing to endure. I deserve more than he can give me right now, and his conflict is screwing with my heart, screwing with my head. Everything with him is just too much. Me. I want you to leave. I can't be around you anymore. It terrifies me that you're wishing I were her. He hangs his head and stares at the floor for several moments while I continue to stare at him. He isn't denying that he'd rather be with Maggie right now. He isn't making excuses or telling me he could love me more than he loves her. He's completely quiet because he knows I'm right. Me, I need you to leave. Please. And if you really care about me, you won't come back. He slowly turns and faces me. His eyes lock with mine, and I've never seen more emotions flash through them than in this moment. No, he says firmly. He begins walking toward me, and I begin backing away from him. He's shaking his head pleadingly. He reaches me just as my legs meet my bed, and then he grabs my face between his hands and presses his lips to mine. I shake my head and push against his chest. He steps away from me and winces, looking even more frustrated with his inability to communicate with me. His eyes search the room for whatever will help him convince me I'm wrong, but I know nothing can help our situation. He just needs to realize this too. He looks down at my bed, then back at me. He grabs my hand and pulls me around to the side of the bed. He places his hands on my shoulders and pushes me down until I'm seated. I have no idea what he's doing, so I don't resist. Yet. He continues to lower me until I'm lying with my back flat on the bed. He stands straight up and removes his t-shirt. Before he even has it completely over his head, I'm already attempting to roll off the bed. If he thinks sex will fix our situation, he's not as smart as I thought he was.
No, he says again when he sees me trying to escape.
The sheer conviction in his voice causes me to freeze, and I fall back against my mattress again.
He kneels down on the bed, grabs a pillow, and lays it beside my head. He lies down next to me, and my whole body tenses from his close proximity. He picks up his phone. Ridge.
Listen to me, Sydney.
I stare at the text in anticipation of what he'll type next. When I notice that he's not even texting me a follow-up, I look at him. He shakes his head and pulls my phone from my hands, then tosses it beside him. He takes my hand and places it over his heart.
Here, he says, patting my hand. Listen to me here.
My chest tightens when I realize what he wants me to do. He pulls me to him, and I willingly allow it. He gently lowers my head to his heart as he adjusts himself beneath me and helps me get comfortable. I relax against his chest, finding the rhythm of his heartbeat. Beat, beat, pause. Beat, beat, pause. Beat, beat, pause. It's absolutely beautiful. The way it sounds is beautiful. The way it cares is beautiful. The way it loves is beautiful. He presses his lips to the top of my head. I close my eyes and I cry.
Ridge. I hold her against me for so long I'm not even sure if she's awake. I still have so much I want to say to her, but I don't want to move. I love the way she feels when we're wrapped together like this. I'm afraid if I move, she'll come to her senses again and ask me to leave. It's barely been 3 weeks since Maggie and I broke up. When Sydney asked if I'd take Maggie back, I didn't answer, but only because I know she wouldn't believe my answer. I love Maggie, but I honestly don't think Maggie and I are best for each other anymore. I know exactly where we went wrong. The beginning of our relationship was romantic to the point where it was almost fictionalized. We were 19 years old. We barely knew each other. The way we waited for an entire year only built up feelings that weren't based on anything except false hopes and idealized love. By the time Maggie and I were finally able to be together, I think we were more in love with the idea of us rather than with the actual us. Of course, I loved her. I still love her. But until I met Sydney, I had no idea how much my love for Maggie was built up from my desire to swoop in and save her. Maggie was right. I've done nothing for the past 5 years but try to be the hero who protects her. The problem? Heroines don't need protecting. When Sydney put me on the spot earlier, I wanted to tell her no, that I wouldn't take Maggie back. When she said she was terrified that I was wishing she were Maggie, I wanted to grab hold of her and prove to her how I've never, not once, wished I were anywhere else when I'm with her. I wanted to tell her the only regret I have is not realizing sooner which one of them I was better for. Which girl I made more sense with. Which girl I grew to love in a realistic, natural way, not in an idealized sense. I didn't say anything because I'm terrified she won't understand. I've chosen Maggie over her time and time again, and it's my own fault that I've put doubt into Sydney's head. And even though I know that the scenario she's painting could never happen because Maggie and I both accept that it's over, I'm not so sure I wouldn't take Maggie back. However, my decision wouldn't be because I want to be with Maggie more. It wouldn't even be because I love Maggie more. But how do I possibly convince Sydney of that when it's hard for me to comprehend? I don't want Sydney ever to feel like my second choice, when I know in my heart that she's the right choice, the only choice. I keep my arm around her and I pick up my phone. She lifts her head and rests her chin on my chest, looking up at me. I hand her back her phone and she takes it, then turns away from me and presses her ear against my heart again. Me, do you want to know why I needed you to listen to me? She doesn't respond with a text. She just nods her head yes, remaining pressed against my chest. One of her hands is slowly tracing up and down from my waist to my arm. The feel of her hands against my skin is something I never want to become a memory. I lower my left hand to the back of her head and stroke her hair. Me. It's kind of a long explanation. Do you have a notebook I can write in? She nods and slides off me. She reaches into her nightstand and takes out a notebook and a pen. I readjust myself against her headboard. She hands me the notebook but doesn't move closer to me. I grab her wrist and part my legs, then motion for her to lie against me while I write. She crawls toward me and wraps her arms around my waist, pressing her ear to my heart again. I put my arms around her and prop the notebook on my knee, resting my cheek on top of her head. I wish there was an easier way for us to communicate so all the things I have to say to her could be instant. I wish I could look into her eyes and tell her exactly how I feel and what's on my mind, but I can't. And I hate that for us. Instead, I lay my heart out on paper. She remains still against my chest while I take almost 15 minutes to gather my thoughts and get them all down for her. When I'm finished, I hand her the notebook. She readjusts herself until her back is pressed against my chest. I keep my arms around her and hold her while she reads the letter.
Sydney. I have no idea what to expect from the words he's just written, but as soon as he hands me the paper, I begin to soak every sentence up as quickly as my eyes can scan them. The fact that a barrier exists in the way we communicate makes every word I receive from him, in whatever form, something I feel the need to consume as quickly as possible. I don't know if I'm actually more aware of my own heartbeat than other people are of theirs, but I tend to believe I am. The fact that I can't hear the world around me leaves me to focus more on the world inside me. Brennan told me the only time he's aware of his own heartbeat is when it's quiet and he's being still. That's not the case for me because it's always quiet in my world. I'm always aware of my heartbeat. Always. I know its pattern. I know its rhythm. I know what makes it speed up and slow down, and I even know when to expect that. Sometimes I feel my heart react before my brain has the chance to. The reactions of my heart have always been something I was able to predict. Until a few months ago. The first night you walked out onto your balcony, was the first night I noticed the change. It was subtle, but it was there. Just an extra little skip. I brushed it off because I didn't want to think it had anything to do with you. I liked how loyal my heart was to Maggie, and I didn't want my loyalty to her to change. But then, the first time I saw you singing along to one of my songs, it happened again. Only that time it was more obvious. It would speed up a little faster every time I saw your lips moving. It would start beating in places I never felt my heart beat before. That first night I saw you singing, I had to get up and go inside to finish playing because I didn't like how you made my heart feel. For the first time, I felt as though I had absolutely no control over it, and that made me feel horrible. The first time I walked out of my bedroom to find you standing in my apartment soaking wet from the rain, my God, I didn't know hearts could beat like that. I knew my heart like the back of my hand, and nothing had ever made it react like you did. I put the blankets on the couch for you as quickly as I could, pointed you in the direction of the bathroom, and immediately went back to my bedroom. I'll spare you the details of what I had to do while you were in my shower in order to calm myself down after seeing you up close for the first time. My physical reaction to you didn't worry me. Physical reactions are normal, and at that point my heart still belonged to Maggie. My heartbeats were all for Maggie. They always had been. But the more time I spent with you, the more you started to unintentionally infiltrate and steal some of those heartbeats. I did everything I could to prevent it from happening. For a while, I convinced myself that I was stronger than my heart, which is why I allowed you to stay. I thought what I felt for you was nothing but attraction, and that if I let myself have you in my fantasies enough,
That would suffice in reality. However, I soon realized that the way I fantasized about you wasn't at all how guys normally fantasize about girls they're attracted to. I didn't imagine myself stealing kisses from you when no one was around. I didn't imagine myself sliding into your bed in the middle of the night and doing to you all the things we both wished I would do. Instead, I was imagining what it would feel like if you fell asleep in my arms. I was imagining what it would feel like to wake up next to you in the morning. I was imagining your smiles and your laughter and even how good it would feel to be able to comfort you when you cried. The trouble I had gotten myself into became obvious the night I put those headphones in your ears and watched you sing the song we created together. Watching those words pass your lips and knowing I couldn't hear them and feeling how much my heart ached for us in that moment, I knew what was happening was so much more than I could control. My strength was overpowered by my weakness for you. The second my lips touched yours, my heart split completely in two. Half of it belonged to you from that point on. Every other beat of my heart was for you. I knew I should have asked you to leave that night, but I couldn't bring myself to do it. The thought of saying goodbye to you hurt way too much. I had planned on asking you to move out the next day, but once we talked through everything, the ease with which we dealt with our situation gave me more excuses to ignore it. Knowing we were both fighting it gave me hope that I could give back to Maggie the part of my heart I had lost to you. The weekend of Warren's party was when I realized it was too late. I spent the entire night of the party trying not to watch you, trying not to be obvious, trying to keep my attention focused on Maggie, where it should have been. However, all the effort and denial in the world couldn't have saved me from what happened the next day. When I walked into your room and sat down beside you on the bed, I felt it. I felt you give me a piece of your heart. And Sydney, I wanted it. I wanted your heart more than I've ever wanted anything. The second I reached down and held your hand in mine, it happened. My heart made its choice, and it chose you. My relationship with Maggie was a good one, and I never want to disrespect what I had with her. When I told you I've loved her since the moment I met her, and that I'd love her until the moment I die, I was being honest. I have always loved her, I do love her, and I always will love her. She's an incredible person who deserves so much more than what life has handed her, and it pisses me off to this day when I think about it. I would switch my fate with hers in a second if I had that option. Unfortunately, life doesn't work that way. Fate doesn't work that way. So even after I knew I had found in you what I would never find in my relationship with Maggie, it still wasn't enough. No matter how much I cared for you or how deep my feelings for you ran, it would have never been enough to get me to leave Maggie. If I couldn't change her fate, I was at least gonna give her the best damn life I could give her. Even if it meant sacrificing aspects of my own, I would have done it without pause, and I never would have regretted it, not even for a second. However, until 3 weeks ago, I didn't realize that the best life I could give her was a life without me in it. She needed the opposite of what I could offer her, and I know that now. She knows that now, and we accept it. So when you ask if I would choose her over you, you're presenting a situation that I can't give you a straight answer to. Because yes, at this point, I probably would walk away from you if she asked me to. The majority of my loyalty still lies with her. But if you're asking who I need more, who I want to be with more, who my heart craves more, my heart decided that for me. A long time ago, Sydney. When I've read the last word, I pull the notebook against my chest and cry. He slides me off of him until I'm on my back, and he hovers over me, guiding my eyes up to meet his.
It's you, he says aloud. My heart wants you. A sob breaks free from my chest when I hear his words. I immediately grab his shoulders and lift myself up, pressing my lips to the area directly over his heart. I kiss him over and over, silently thanking him for giving me reassurance that I haven't been in this alone. When I lower my head back to the pillow, he lies beside me, then pulls me against him. He touches my cheek with his hand and slowly leans in to kiss me. His mouth caresses mine so carefully, it feels as if he's holding my heart in his hand and is afraid he might drop it. As much as I'm convinced he would do everything he could to protect my heart, I'm still too scared to hand it over. I don't want to give it to him until I know it's the only heart he's holding. I don't open my eyes because I don't want him to know I hear him leaving. I felt him kiss me. I felt him slide his arm out from beneath me. I heard him pull his shirt over his head. I heard him search for a pen. I heard him write me a letter, and I heard him place it on the pillow beside me. I feel his hand as it presses into the mattress beside my head. His lips meet my forehead before he pulls away and walks out of my bedroom door. When I hear the front door shut, I roll onto my side and pull the covers over my head to block out the sunlight. If I didn't have to work today, I'd stay right here in this position and cry myself dry. I brush my hand across the mattress in search of his letter. When I find it, I pull it under the covers with me and read it. Sydney. A few months ago, we thought we had it all figured out. I was with the one girl I thought I would be with forever, and you were with a guy you thought deserved you way more than he did. Look at us now. Wanting more than anything to be free to love each other, but cursed by bad timing and loyal hearts. We both know where we want to be. We just don't know how to get there, or when we should get there. I wish things were as easy as they seemed when I was 19. We'd grab a calendar and pick a date, and we'd start a countdown until I could show up at your front door and start loving you. However, I've learned that the heart can't be told when and who and how it should love. The heart does whatever the hell it wants to do. The only thing we can control is whether we give our lives and our minds the chance to catch up to our hearts. I know that's what you want more than anything. Time to catch up. As much as I want to stay here and allow this to begin between us, there's something I want from you even more than that. I want you to be with me in the end, and I know that can't happen if I keep trying to rush our beginning. I know exactly why you were hesitant to let me in last night. You aren't ready yet. Maybe I'm not either. You've always said you wanted time to yourself, and the last thing I want is to start a relationship with you when I've barely given enough respect to the one that just ended with Maggie. I don't know when you'll be ready for me. It might be next month or next year. Whenever it is, just know that I have absolutely no doubt that we can make this work. I know we can. If there are two people in this world capable of finding a way to love each other, it's us. Ridge. P.S. I spent most of the night watching you sleep, so that's one fantasy I got to check off the list. I also wrote lyrics to an entire song, which was unfortunate for Brennan. I didn't have my guitar, so I forced him to make a rough cut of it at 5 o'clock this morning so I could leave it with you. One of these days, I'll play it for you, along with all the other songs I plan to write for you while we're apart. Until then, I'll be waiting patiently. Just say when. I fold the letter and pull it against my chest.
As much as it hurts to know he's walking away, I also know that I need to let him. I asked for this. We need this. I need this. I need to get myself to a point where I know that we can finally be together without all the doubt running through my head. He's right. My mind needs to catch up to my heart. I run the back of my hand across my eyes, then open my texts. Me, can you come over? I need your help. Warren,
if this has to do with the fact that I gave Ridge your address last night, I'm sorry. He forced it out of me.
Me, this has nothing to do with that. I need to ask you for a huge favor. Warren,
be there when I get off work tonight. Should I bring condoms?
Me, funny guy. I close out the text to Warren and open up the song Ridge just sent me. I reach into my drawer for my headphones, then fall back against my pillow and hit play. It's you. Baby, everything you've ever done, underneath this here sun, it doesn't even matter anymore. Oh, of this, I'm sure. 'Cause you've taken me places I wanna be, and you show me everything that I could ever want to see. You know it's you, know it's you. I think about you every single day, trying to think of something better to say. Maybe, hi, how are you? Not just anything will do. 'Cause you've taken me places I want to be, and you show me everything that I could ever want to see. You know it's you. Know it's you.
Chapter 24. Ridge. Me. I'm looking at your schedule for March. You're free on the 18th. Brennan. Why do I feel like I'm about to be busy on the 18th? Me. I'm planning a show, and I need your help. We'll do it locally. Brennan. What kind of show? Full band? Me. No, just you and me. Maybe Warren if he'll sign for us. Brennan. Why do I feel like this has to do with Sydney? Me. Why do I feel like I don't care what you feel like? Brennan. The ball is in her court, Ridge. You really should just leave things alone until she's ready. I know how you feel about her, and I don't want you to screw it up. Me. March 18th is still 3 months away. If she hasn't made up her mind by that date, then all I'm doing is giving her a little shove. And when did you start giving relationship advice? How long has it been since you were in one? Oh wait, that would be never. Brennan. If I agree to help you, will you shut the fuck up? What do you need me to do? Me. Just carve out some time for me between now and then to run through some new songs. Brennan. Is someone over his writer's block? Me. Yeah, well, someone once told me heartache is good for lyrical inspiration. Unfortunately, he was right. Brennan. Sounds like a smart guy. I close out my text to Brennan and open one up to Warren. Me. March 18th. I need a local venue, a small one. Then I need you to get Sydney to go there with you that night. Warren. Is she supposed to know you orchestrated this? Me. No. Lie to her. Warren. Not a problem. I'm good at lying. I set my phone down, pick up my guitar, and walk out onto my balcony. It's been almost a month since I last saw her. Neither of us has texted the other. I know Warren still keeps in contact with her, but he refuses to tell me anything, so I just stopped asking. As much as I miss her and as much as I want to beg her to just let this begin with us, I know time is better for both of us right now. There was still too much guilt rolled up in the thought of starting something too soon, despite how much we wanted to be together. Waiting until we're both in a good place is definitely what needs to happen. However, I feel as if I'm already there. Maybe it's easier for me because I know where Maggie and I stand and I know where my heart stands, but Sydney doesn't have that reassurance. If time will give her that reassurance, then I'll give her time. Just not too much. March 18th is only 3 months away. I hope to hell she's ready by then because I'm not sure I can keep myself away from her for longer than that. I scoot my chair to the edge of the balcony and fold my arms over the railing, then look over at her old balcony. Every time I come out here and see her empty chair, it makes all of this so much harder. But I can't seem to find anything inside my apartment that reminds me of her anymore. She left nothing when she moved, and she really never had anything while she was here. Being outside on this balcony is the closest I can come to feeling her since it seems we're so far apart. I lean back in my chair, pick up a pen, and begin writing the lyrics to another song, with nothing but her on my mind. The cool air running through my hair. Nights like these doesn't seem fair. For you and I to be so far away, the stars all shimmer like a melody, like they're playing for you and me, but only I can hear their sounds. I pick up my guitar and work through the first few chords. I want these songs to be enough to convince her that we're ready, so every single thing has to be perfect. I'm just nervous that I'm relying too much on Warren to help make it happen. I hope he's more reliable in this situation with Sydney than he is with his rent checks.
Chapter 25. Sydney. I'm not going.
Yes, you are,
Warren says, kicking my legs off the coffee table. I'm bored out of my mind. Bridget works all weekend and Ridge is off doing God knows what with God knows who. I immediately look up at him with my heart caught in my throat. He laughs.
That got your attention.
He reaches forward, grabs my hands, and pulls me off the couch.
I'm kidding. Ridge is at home working, being a mopey little shit just like you're trying to be.
Now go get pretty and come out with me tonight, or I'll sit on the couch with you and force you to watch porn.
I pull my hands from his and walk to the kitchen. I open a cabinet, then grab a cup.
I don't want to go out tonight, Warren. I had class all day, and it's my only night off from the library. I'm sure you can find someone else to go with you.
I grab a container of juice from the refrigerator and fill my glass. Leaning against the counter, I take a sip as I watch Warren pout in my living room. He's kind of adorable when he pouts, which is why I always give him such a hard time.
Listen up, Sid, he says, walking toward the kitchen.
He grabs a bar stool and pulls it out, then takes a seat.
I'm about to lay things out for you, okay?
I roll my eyes. I doubt I can stop you, so go ahead. He lays his palms flat on the counter in front of him and leans forward.
You suck.
I laugh.
That's it? That's what you needed to lay out for me?
He nods.
You suck.
So does Ridge. Since the night I gave him your address, you've both sucked. All he does is work or write music. He doesn't even play pranks on me anymore. Every time I'm over here, you're just focused on studying. You never want to go out. You never want to hear my sex stories anymore.
Correction, I say, interrupting him. I've never wanted to hear your sex stories. That's nothing new.
Whatever,
he says, shaking his head. My point is that the two of you are miserable. I know you need time and blah, 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 but that doesn't mean you have to give up fun while you're figuring your life out. I want to go have fun.
No one wants to have fun with me anymore, and that's all your fault, because you're the only one who can put a stop to the misery you and Ridge are going through. So yes, you suck. You suck, you suck, you suck. And if you want to stop sucking so much, then go get dressed so we can go out and not suck together for just a few hours.
I don't know how to argue with that. I do suck. I suck, I suck, I suck. Only Warren could put it in such a simple, straightforward way that would actually make sense. I know I've been miserable the past few months, and it doesn't help to know that Ridge has been miserable too. He's miserable because he's sitting around waiting for me to get over whatever it is that's keeping me from contacting him. The last thing he said in his letter to me was, "Just say when." I've been trying to say when since the moment I read that letter, but I'm just too scared. I've never felt about anyone or anything the way I feel about him, and the thought of our not working out is enough to keep me from saying that one little word. I feel as if the longer we wait and the more time we have to heal, the better chance we'll have at our maybe someday. I keep waiting for the moment when I know for sure that he's moved on from Maggie. I keep waiting for the moment when I know for sure that he's ready to commit fully to me. I keep waiting for the moment when I know for sure that I'm not going to be consumed with guilt for allowing myself to trust someone with my heart again. I don't know when I'll get to that point, and it hurts to know that my inability to move forward is holding Ridge back. "Now," Warren says, shoving me out of the kitchen, "get dressed." I can't believe I've let him talk me into this. I check my makeup one last time and grab my purse. As soon as he sees me, he shakes his head. I huff and throw my hands in the air. "What now?" I sigh. "I'm not dressed appropriately." "You look great, but I want you to wear the blue dress." "I burned that dress, remember?" I say.
"The hell you did,"
he says, pushing me back toward my bedroom. "You were wearing it last week when I stopped by. Go put it on so we can leave." I spin around to face him. "I know how much you like that dress, and wearing it tonight while I'm out with you is a little too creepy, Warren." He narrows his eyes.
"Listen, Sid, I don't mean to be rude, but all this moping around for the past few months has caused you to put on a little weight. Your ass looks huge in those jeans. The blue dress may be able to hide a little of that, so go put it on, or I might be too embarrassed to go out with you."
I suddenly feel like slapping him again, but I know he's just got a peculiar sense of humor. I also know he might have a completely different reason for why he wants me to wear this dress, and I'm trying not to let myself think it has anything to do with Ridge, but pretty much every situation I'm in somehow makes me think about Ridge. It's nothing new. But Warren is a guy who seems to put his foot in his mouth a lot, and I'm a girl, so I still wonder if his sarcastic remark has any truth to it. I have been replacing the void Ridge left in my life with food. I look down at my stomach and pat it, then look back up at Warren. "You're an asshole." He nods.
"I know."
The innocent smile on his face makes me instantly forgive any crudeness behind his joke. I change into the blue dress, but I am so cock-blocking him tonight. Jerk.
"Wow. This is different," I say, taking in my surroundings.
It's nothing like the clubs Warren usually likes to go to. This one is a lot smaller, without even much of a dance floor. There's an empty stage along one wall, but there's no one performing tonight. The jukebox is playing, and several people are scattered around at tables, talking quietly among themselves. Warren chooses a table toward the middle of the room.
"You're a cheap date," I say. "You didn't even feed me."
He laughs.
"I'll buy you a burger on the way home."
Warren pulls out his phone and begins texting someone, so I look around for a while. It's kind of cozy. It's also kind of weird that Warren brought me here. But I'm thinking he doesn't have any evil intentions because he's not even paying attention to me. His attention is on his phone, and he keeps glancing at the door. I don't understand why he wanted to come out tonight, and I especially don't understand why he chose this place.
"You're actually the one who sucks," I say. "Stop ignoring me."
He responds without even looking up at me.
"You aren't talking, so technically I'm not ignoring you."
I'm curious now. He's not being himself the way he's so distracted. "What's up with you, Warren?" As soon as I ask the question, he looks up from his phone and smiles over my shoulder, then stands.
"You're late," he says to someone behind me. I look to see Bridget walking toward us. "Screw you, Warren," she says to him with a small smile. He wraps his arms around her, and they kiss for several uncomfortable seconds. I reach up and tap him on the arm when I'm convinced that neither of them can breathe. He pulls away from Bridget, winks at her, and slides out his chair for her. "I have to go to the bathroom," he says to Bridget. He points at me. "Don't go anywhere." He says it as if it's a command, and it irritates me even more because he's being really rude tonight. I turn and face Bridget once he's left the table. "Warren said you were working all weekend," I say. She shrugs. "Yeah, well, he probably told you that because of the elaborate scheme he has planned for tonight. He made me come so you wouldn't leave when you found out about it. Oh, and I'm not supposed to tell you any of that, so if he comes back, play dumb." My heart rate escalates. "Please tell me you're kidding." She shakes her head and raises her arm in the air, calling over a waiter. "I wish I was kidding. I had to switch shifts to be here, and now I have to work a double tomorrow." I drop my head into my hands, regretting the fact that I let Warren talk me into anything. Just when I'm reaching for my purse to leave, he walks out onto the empty stage. "Oh, God," I groan. "What the hell is he doing?" My stomach is in knots. I have no idea what he has planned, but whatever it is, it can't be good. He taps on the microphone, then adjusts the height of it. "I'd like to thank everyone for coming tonight. Not that any of you are here for this particular event, since it's a surprise, but I feel the need to thank you anyway." He adjusts the microphone once more, then finds our table in the crowd and waves. "I want to apologize to you, Sid, because I feel really bad for lying to you. You haven't gained weight and your ass looked great in those jeans, but you really needed to wear that dress tonight. Also, you don't suck. I lied about that too." Several people in the crowd laugh, but I just groan and bury my face in my hands, peeking through my fingers at him up on the stage. "All right, let's get on with it, shall we? We have a few new songs for you tonight. Unfortunately, the whole band couldn't be here because..." He looks to his left at the small width of the stage, then to his right. "Well, I don't think they all could have fit, so I'd like to present to you a small portion of the band, Sounds of Cedar." My heart falls to the floor. I close my eyes when the crowd begins to clap. "Please let it be Ridge. Please don't let it be Ridge. Jesus, when will this confusion go away?" I can hear commotion up on the stage, and I'm too scared to open my eyes. I want to see him sitting up there so much it hurts. "Hey, Sid," Warren says into the microphone. I inhale a slow, calming breath, then open my eyes and hesitantly look up at him. "Remember a few months ago when I told you sometimes we have to have really bad days in order to keep the good ones in perspective?" I think I nod. I can't really feel my body anymore. "Well, this is one of the good days. This is one of the really good days." He raises his hand in the air and motions to my table. "Somebody get that girl a shot of whatever will help loosen her up." He moves the microphone to the stool next to him, and my eyes are glued to the empty chairs. Someone lays a shot on the table in front of me, and I instantly grab it and down it. I drop the shot glass back onto the table and look up, just in time to see them walk onto the stage. Brennan is first, and Ridge is right behind him, carrying a guitar. Oh my God. He looks incredible. It's the first time I've ever seen him on a stage. I've been wanting to watch him perform since the first moment I heard his guitar on my balcony, and here I am, about to watch my fantasy become reality. He looks the same as he did the last time I saw him, just
Incredible. I guess he looked incredible back then, too. I just didn't feel right allowing myself to admit it.